Välkommen till Hästveterinärerna, en podcast från Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health. I den här podden samtalar vi med specialister från olika områden inom hästmedicinen. Med det gemensamt att de delar vår och din passion för hästarna. Välkommen tillbaka till Hästveterinärerna, podden för dig som är veterinär eller djursjukskötare och arbetar med häst. Jag heter Maria Wilhelmsson. I det tredje avsnittet med Sanna Lindåse från SLU så pratar vi mer om insulindysreglering och hur vi kan tänka kring utfodring till dessa hästar i förhållande till deras grad av insulindysreglering. Vi pratar också om så kallade meal tolerance test och om hur du som veterinär kan tillämpa detta i klinisk praxis. A warm welcome back to you, Sanna, for this third episode of this series in the podcast about endocrine disorders and insulin dysregulation.
Thank you so much.
So when it comes to feeding of the insulin dysregulated horse, we've learned that the hay should not contain high sugar levels or levels of water-soluble carbohydrates. And this figure has been set to 10-12% per kilo dry matter. But can you tell us a little bit more about where does this number actually come from? And how relevant is this?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a very good question, actually, because the first thing is that I noticed that you said hay with less than 10%. So if it's okay, I would just start to talk about like the dry matter content. So the dry matter is a measure of how wet the food is. Nothing else, actually. So it is not the dry matter content of the forage that is important for the insulin dysregulated horse. It's the amount of sugars. And you said water-soluble carbohydrates. And water-soluble carbohydrates is the content of simple sugars and fructans. So in Scandinavia, we culture cool season grasses, and they do not store starch. So for that reason, we can use the term water-soluble carbohydrates. Internationally, we normally use non-structural carbohydrates, and that term also includes starch. Yeah. So that is just to straight things out a bit. So because if we take the situation in Scandinavia, we use haylage a lot. We are very good at producing high quality haylage. So that is not a bad feed for a insulin dysregulated horse. So the important thing is that we need to have a analysis investigating the sugar content if we are able to know what we are feeding the horse. So that is number one. And you also mentioned this recommendation of less than 10 to 12 WSC or NSC content. And actually, this cutoff, you can see it almost everywhere. And it is actually based on results from one single study using a very small number of horses. So I would say that the evidence supporting this specific cutoff are not overly convincing. But we know that the NSC content is very important. So it will relate to the degree of postprandial hyperinsulinemia in insulin dysregulated horses. So indeed, it is important to feed the horse a NSC or WSC low levels of these sugars in ID horses. But I would say that we can question if the magic cutoff really is 10-12%.
Yeah.
But I don't think it, from if you look at it from a horse owner or a clinical point of view, it really doesn't matter, because I think you should aim at finding a forage with so low concentrations of WSC as possible.
Yeah.
And more than that, you cannot do. Of course, you can You can add straw, for example, to reduce the amount of forage and still keep like the total amount of roughage not too low. Mm. But and actually, as we are talking about this cutoff, we did present, or our new PhD student Elin Svonni did present a result from an ongoing study at the last GIES meeting that we had in January in Bern this year. And Elin presented results from, it is an ongoing study, so nothing is totally finished and like investigated yet. But in the study, we have a lot of ID horses, and we have studied the relationship between the insulin concentrations after feeding.
Mm.
So we have sampled these horses after intake of a standardized amount of their own feed.
Mm.
And we have related that insulin, postprandial insulin concentrations to the content of WSC. And we also removed the fraction of fructans.
Mm.
So we looked at only the simple sugars, and we looked at the whole water-soluble carbs, so the WSC.
Mm.
And we were very surprised because we could not identify that these two factors relate at all to each other.
Mm.
If we do simple linear regressions to see how much do they relate to each other.
Mm-mm.
So it was quite surprising. And we have been thinking a lot about these results, and we are not finished with the study. So of course things can change.
Mm.
But I think what is important here is that, this group of horses, they are moderate to severely insulin dysregulated. And in the majority of cases, the animal owners have already done everything that they possibly can do when it comes to management and feeding of the horse.
Yeah.
So the majority of these horses were already on a forage with maybe below 12-13%, the majority of the horses. So that means that when we have WSC contents that are at that range or lower, maybe it doesn't matter so much if you have 4%, 6%, or 8%.
Yeah.
Are you with me here?
Yeah, yeah.
But if we had included more horses with that were fed more sugar, maybe the results had been different.
Yeah.
But if I was to interpret these results from a clinical point of view, I would actually say that it is crucial to feed ID horses a forage with as low WSC content as possible. But maybe we do not have to aim at like zero sugar or 3% or 2% or so, because when we are in the lower ranges, there are other things that are more important to explain the postprandial hyperinsulinemia than just lowering the sugar content just a couple of more percent.
Mm,
are you with me here?
Yeah.
And we know that the prevailing degree in that individual horse, that the prevailing degree of insulin dysregulation is the most important factor that will affect the postprandial hyperinsulinemia. So if you have a severely sick horse, it may not differ for that individual horse if you lower the WSC content from 8 to 4%, because it won't matter, because there are other factors that have a bigger impact.
Yeah.
But the food is important, yes. But maybe this is like, just to try to summarize it and put it in a clinical perspective, because it is very difficult for horse owners that have these very sick horses, and they are extremely stressed because they are looking for a feed with like zero sugar, and it is very difficult to produce forage with extremely low sugar content.
Yeah.
And we have other like side effects that also maybe the protein values also are lower.
Mm.
So you need to like complement the feed with high protein pellets and
so forth.
So it is difficult to find a perfect feed. And I think this maybe can be like, it may take a bit stress out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you do the best you can, and then you have to focus on other things also, not only the feed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's something that you also see, right? Clinically, you see these horse owners that really do everything and a little bit more, And then they're still going nowhere with the insulin levels, or with the horse still gets laminitis over and over again, even though they do everything correctly. Mm. And then you have those who actually manage the disease, and that's why we have to keep going, right? Mm. It's really interesting with this ongoing study of yours, because you were looking at the postprandial insulin levels when they had, instead of a glucose syrup, they had their regular forage.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Do you think, and this is just, this is very hypothetical and maybe a bit longer in the future, but do you think it's a good idea to do sort of glucose tolerance test or dynamic test with the feed, with the forage, in order to find, instead of looking at the number on the analysis, the number, the amount of WSC, which is also has to be remembered, it's average. It's it's not going to be in every ration that this horse is getting or from every bale.
Very, a very important point. Yeah.
So it's, instead of looking at this and say, okay, so this is 99 grams and this is 101 grams, like use one but not the other. Do you think it's a good idea to do this dynamic testing after a meal?
Yeah, I would say definitely, definitely. And not, I don't think we need to talk about like very far in the future, because we have actually during the recent years starting to add the, we call it a meal tolerance test.
Yeah.
Maybe I can relate to that term. So meal tolerance test is when you feed the horse forage and you take blood samples. Mm. So it's very easy. So I think the first step, again, we have a horse that we, maybe the horse have had laminitis, or you have something else that make you have a suspicion of insulin dysregulation, or maybe PPID. Mm. So the first thing, again, is to perform a dynamic test to get the diagnose. And you will also be able to see how high insulin levels do this horse have. I mean, is the horse just slightly above the cutoff? Of course, that horse is likely to be less insulin dysregulated than if you have a horse with several hundreds of insulin during this test. Mm. So you get a diagnosis and you get like a feeling of how sick is this horse. But as you just said, what is important here? Okay, we know that the feed can contain different amounts of sugar and it's not easy to find a perfect food. And we have other factors such as the insulin dysregulation degree that will affect how the individual horse responds. So I would say that to add, like you get the diagnosis, then to add a meal tolerance test is very convenient, because then you will know exactly how that horse respond to their daily feeding, that it will have like six times every day. Mm. So it is a very good test to see what does this horse experience in terms of hyperinsulinemia every day.
Mm-mm.
And at the moment, we do not have like a valid protocol. We do not have a protocol that has been scientifically evaluated. Mm. But and I will come back to another problem, but I don't think we need to have that to be able to start doing this with our horses, because we get so good information that maybe we do not have a cutoff. Yeah, but that will be very difficult to have as we know that the content of the sugar in the different feeds will differ.
Yeah.
So I think it will be very hard to have like a cutoff. You should be here or there. But the important thing is that we need to figure out to get the most out of this test is what is the safe level of postprandial insulin concentrations after a meal intake.
Yeah.
And that is like extremely important for us researchers to continue to try to figure out, because we do not know today.
Mm.
Is it 200 of micro international units per mils, or is it 100? Mm. We don't know. Mm. We have research performed that have been able to show that above or at a level of 200 micro international units per mils of insulin, there is a very high risk of laminitis. Mm. So, okay, we know that, but we have the problem that for once we use different assays when it comes to analysis of insulin. Mm. So we cannot interpret that if we'll use another method for our insulin analysis. So that is one problem. Mm. And that is also important when you perform the test that you know what type of assay being used, because you will have very different insulin concentrations depending on tests. Mm. So I just put it in here because I just realized I haven't talked about this. Mm. But again, back to the safe level. Yeah, we have some studies that can say it's a high risk here. How should we interpret that using another insulin cutoff? And is that a safe level? No, it is not. Mm. We know that they develop laminitis here. So we have been working from... This is just based on our clinical experience. Mm. So this has to be taken with a very I can't promise anything. And this may change extremely in the future. Mm. But at the moment, when we recommend to do these tests, we are aiming at a insulin concentration less than 100 microinternational units per mil. Mm. And we use Mercodia insulin ELISA for analysis of insulin. Mm. So this is where we clinically have realized that if we are less than this, it is more likely that the horse won't develop laminitis than it is that it will develop laminitis. But so, of course, this is, it is not validated in any type of way. So yeah, but I think I still think we need to go here, because we need to learn how to deal with these horses. You cannot just leave the horse in the stable and say, well, don't feed this horse too much. Yeah. It needs to drop in weight. That is not enough. We need to help these horse owners and these horses in a more appropriate way.
Yeah.
And how to do, I can explain how we do. Do you want me to explain how we do this test?
Yes, please.
So the only thing we do, that when we use this in a research perspective, we take several blood samples during the postprandial phase. But that is not possible, again, when you are a clinician. So I would say that the way we recommend horse owners and, clinicians to do this is to... the best thing is that if you can have the horse in a box stall or something during the night, and you feed the horse in the evening, and then you feed the horse in the morning. In the morning, the insulin concentrations are mostly elevated during the 24 hours of the day. So you do it in the morning, as you almost always also do when you do a sugar test. Mm. And you feed the horse the largest meal that this horse will be delivered during that day, and many times that is the meal that the horse gets in the evening, right? Mm. So you give that meal in the morning, and the horse are allowed to eat, and then the veterinarian comes out and take blood samples somewhere between 120 and 150 minutes after serving the horse the feed.
Okay.
Because that is when we have identified that the most ID horses have their peak in insulin concentrations.
Can I just add and ask, even if they haven't finished their meal, it's after they started eating?
Yeah, it's after they started eating.
Okay.
So, yeah. So even if they haven't, even if they still are eating, you take the blood sample at 120 to 150 minutes.
Mm.
And this, of course, we can have horses peaking before, and we can have horses peaking a lot later in their insulin concentrations. But that is the same when we do a oral sugar test. So we have to set the cutoff somewhere.
Yeah.
So this is where the window where we think it is most appropriate to take the sample at the moment. Again, this may change in the future.
Yeah.
But we use this both in a research setting and also for the veterinarians working close to us. We have learned how to do this, and they really like it because, you get so much more knowledge about that individual horse. And if that horse, we can at least say that if this horse have very high insulin levels, you say 200, 300, 400, that is like a ticking bomb.
Yeah.
To develop laminitis. And then you know that you need to do something extremely acute to save that horse from getting laminitis.
Yeah. So it's very applicable then when it comes to the actual individual, which is something that I think have been missing a lot when it comes to all these both the research, but also, I mean, that's natural. You have you research a population, right, and not individuals. But also, when it comes to all these recommendations, this number, as we talked about, the 10 to 12%, it's everywhere, and it's been repeated so many times that it's became like the solid truth. But when again, there are horses that still develop laminitis, even though you do everything right. And this is such a good way, I think, to look at this individual horse and this individual horse owner. What is, how is his or her measurements doing? You know, are we moving in the right direction with this patient? I think it's very important.
Exactly, exactly. And I can feel so much with owners of these horses because they are so frustrated. They are extremely scared every time they go out to the stable. They're I hope not for laminitis.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Every day is like a struggle. And of course we have problems with compliance. We tell the owner to do something, and it is difficult for them, and they maybe don't do what you say. But I think we are we have a big responsibility here to like give them some more support when it comes, because it is not easy to induce weight loss in these type of horses.
No.
They are extremely prone to like keep the energy that they are delivered. So we need to step up and take better care. I think it's like an overall thing that we need to look more into the individual, into the individual, as you just said, than just going on this, because it is the goal for us to be able to decrease the prevalence of laminitis in the horse population. I'm sure about that.
And just to be maybe even more adventurous and going even more off piste when it comes to what's validated and not, is this something that you see could also be done maybe with grass, with pasture, like put it on the grass and then 150 minutes later I come and take a blood sample, you know?
That is also, because this pasture turnout, no pasture turnout, it's like going on forever. It's extremely, extremely difficult for, so if I get the question, but can I let my horse be at pasture?
Yeah.
The first thing is that, the first thing I always say is that I can't tell you because I don't know your horse. We need to sample the horse. We need to know, number one, does it have insulin dysregulation? How severely sick is this horse?
Yeah.
So a horse with like extreme hyperinsulinemia to a oral sugar test, I would never recommend pasture. But we have horse owners that are like, I will put the horse down if I'm not able to have this horse together with the other horses that I have. And, you know, maybe they don't have a possibility to have the horse in another type of sand paddock or something like that.
Yeah.
So if you have the situation and if you have a horse that maybe have never developed laminitis, it is the phenotype EMS, but maybe the insulin dysregulation test showed that, yeah, the horse is insulin dysregulated, but maybe not extremely. Of course, if you are brave, you can test this in the exact same manner at pasture than as you do with the forage. And I think the best way to do it is that if you can put the horse in a box stall during the night, so you know that the horse, when you take the horse out in the morning, that it will start eating directly, because otherwise it's quite difficult. They have the horses are eating in during different periods during the day if they are housed on pasture 24 hours. So if you have the horse in a box stall during the night and then you put it out and you take a blood sample 150 to 120 minutes after, you get the same information. How does this individual horse handle this specific situation?
Yeah.
And that is very, very informative, I would say. Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because there are a lot of welfare aspects and a lot of associated with this. And I mean, even if you manage to keep your horse healthy and prevent laminitis, the risk is that you will just get a very unhappy horse, right? To always be in a sand paddock and never go out with friends in the field. And so it's very valuable, I think.
Yes, and when we're at it, I mean, these horses, we have already touched upon that many horses are perfectly managed, but they are so sick from start that their insulin dysregulation is so severe that no matter what you do, you will not be able to inhibit that horse from developing laminitis.
Yeah.
And those horses are the ones that we hope that we in the future can treat with a complementary pharmacological treatment.
Tack för att du lyssnar på Hästveterinärerna. Om du gillar det du hör, glöm inte att trycka prenumerera i din podcast-app så att du inte missar några avsnitt. Berätta också gärna om vad du tycker genom att ge en recension. Vi tar gärna emot tips på kommande gäster och ämnen, och våra kontaktuppgifter finns i poddens beskrivning.